Our reading for today is a poem from a poet who happens to be a favorite of both mine and Roger's. Her name is Wisława Zimborska, and this is her poem entitled Under One Small Star. My apologies to chance for calling it necessity. My apologies to necessity if I'm mistaken after all. Please don't be angry, happiness, that I take you as my due. May my dead be patient with the way my memories fade. My apologies to time for all the world I overlook each second. My apologies to past loves for thinking that the latest is the first. Forgive me distant wars for bringing flowers home. Forgive me open wounds for pricking my finger. I apologize for my record of minuets to those who cry from the depths. I apologize to those who wait in railway stations for being asleep today at 5 a.m. Pardon me, hounded hope, for laughing from time to time. Pardon me, deserts, that I don't rush to you bearing a spoonful of water. And you, falcon, unchanging year after year, always in the same cage, your gaze always fixed on the same point in space, forgive me if it turns out that you were stuffed. My apologies to the felled tree for the table's four legs. My apologies to great questions for small answers. Please don't pay much attention to me, truth. Dignity, please be magnanimous. Bear with me, O mystery of existence, as I pluck the occasional thread from your train. Soul, don't take offense that I've only got you now and then. My apologies to everything, that I can't be everywhere at once. My apologies to everyone, that I can't be each woman and each man. I know I won't be justified as long as I live, since I myself stand in my own way. Don't bear me ill will, speech, that I borrow weighty words and then labor heavily so that they might seem light. A few years ago, it happened to be Easter weekend, I preached a sermon here on the hefty subject of forgiveness. To my surprise, the Post Crescent had planned a feature article that weekend on that same theme, and they interviewed me beforehand. The message of the sermon was heavily noted in the local paper, which was actually pretty cool. Having our Unitarian Universalist theology as the central part of an article on forgiveness during a weekend when many religiously inclined people are reflecting on the topic of how one receives absolution. To my glad surprise, the article seemed to touch a chord with many people, and I heard from several folks, both here in the fellowship and outside of this faith community. Many of them were moved to contact me because I had spoken in there about personal violations that had occurred to me early in my life and how I had overcome them with time and a great deal of work, and I had gained the ability to forgive my perpetrators. Now, that forgiveness came not because they deserved it, I said in the article, and not because I was totally healed, but simply because I had trudged through enough muck and had at one point finally reached the stage where I could no longer carry the stench and the burden of the shame that I felt. In that sermon, we talked about learning to leave our past wounds where they are, in the past, once they've been dealt with. Because we owe it to ourselves to stop those who have hurt us from taking more than they already have. We forgive for our own sakes, not theirs. We forgive in order to halt the perpetuation of the wounding and to end the power that that person has over us. Lots of us, I know, are walking around with similar, craggy, old, sometimes oversensitive wounds in our hearts. And those wounds have the ability to bring lifelong lessons, it seems, and they also have the potential to bring peculiar and extraordinary gifts into our lives. But what I bring you today is a look at this subject from an entirely different angle. Today, we talk about forgiveness of our own errors, our own shortcomings, our own faults, our own inevitable slip-ups, our own missteps in this dance of life. Today, let's talk about how hard it is to find a place of compassion for ourselves as we stumble along this path of shared humanity. This disinclination towards self-forgiveness is one of those things that seems to plague the human psyche. In my work, I feel so privileged that I'm able to speak with folks regularly about matters that are deep and real like this. And what strikes me over and over and over again is how hard most of us work. We try so hard. We are endlessly striving to do better. And yet, of course, we all mess up. We make mistakes over and over and over again. And it seems, despite the ever-present need, finding love and self-forgiveness is a spiritual practice and a skill that very, very few seem to possess. Our offenses may be big or small. We may, for instance, use a disgusted or too amplified voice when we're speaking with our children, and we're later ashamed of that. We may succumb to the temptation to shade the truth a little bit in order to avoid a negative personal consequence. On a more practical level, we might transpose numbers at work and create a costly error. We might forget an important appointment. We probably eat too much. We neglect a promise that we made to our partner or spouse. We act selfishly. We underperform on an exam. We forget to check the pockets of our jeans before we put them in the wash. One way or another, we fall short again and again and again. I think of the Rumi poem with which we are very familiar. We sing it from our hymnal often. The words say, "Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of leaving, ours is no caravan of despair. Come, yet again, come." Dan kindly played that music through the offertory today. It's a beautiful and poignant hymn that touches our souls. But interestingly, there is another line in that poem that Rumi wrote that isn't printed in the hymnal. But those that do know it sometimes sing it behind the verses that we sing. And that line is, "Though you've broken your vows 1,000 times, come, yet again, come." Rumi knew it. Every sage knows it. We do break our vows 1,000 times. Our vows to do better, to be kinder to others. Our vows to attend better to the needs of others. Our vows to finally, once and for all, get our act together. And each time, it's true, there are often family and friends and co-workers who are let down by our mistakes. And it grieves us to bring complications or sorrow into the lives of others. But today, just for this hour, let's focus on how our mistakes let us down. How each time we disappoint ourselves, for many of us, it takes yet another nick out of our already embattled self-image. That when we make a mistake, it sometimes lurks relentlessly in our mind, repeatedly poking at our consciousness with negative messages about our abilities or about our very personhood. At great cost to our own well-being, many of us are exceptionally unaccustomed to the practice of offering ourselves any slack on that tight mental rein that we hold on ourselves. Now think, for example, of a time when you were the subject of some sort of an evaluation. It could have been at work or at school, here at the fellowship, out in the community. Maybe imagine that you're in a setting where you are leading a discussion, making a presentation, perhaps performing a talent of yours. You're doing something that you are invested in and you're doing it for the benefit of others. And afterwards, they hand out a survey to folks, and they want to know the audience's response to what you have offered. Maybe, as is often the case, they rank you on a scale of 1 to 5 about how satisfied they are about what you've offered. And they assign numbers to reflect For instance, how prepared you seemed, or how appropriate and adequate your handouts were, or how polished your words felt. 5 is terrific, and 1 was, well, they didn't think much of you. So if you are like many, many folks, if you were to do such a thing, and later you sat down to review those surveys, I would bet that you would probably breeze through those 4s and 5s with a sense of relief, but without much immediate attention to them. But oh, those 1s and 2s. Now they would get a lot of scrupulous review. My guess is that for many of us, those critical, scurrilous notes would haunt our mind with much, much perseverance, much more perseverance than any of the words of praise that were offered to us. Does that sound true? Yeah, yeah. What a silly lot we humans are. Here's another version of this syndrome, if you will. It's fairly benign, but it's a highly personal, memorable example. Prior to becoming a minister, I was a leader in a local business. And part of our Christmas gift to our employees and to the community was to bring the Wisconsin Singers up to Appleton for a limited performance. Now, I had the honor of opening the show one year, and I was to do the welcome and the introduction. I had never done theater before, nor had I ever been on stage in a darkened hall like that before. I hear some people giggling already. As I came out from behind the curtain, I was, as any of you who are experienced actors would know, I was immediately and completely blinded by the power of the stage lights. As I continued walking sightlessly forward, I had no way of knowing that there was a very large speaker directly in my path. I, of course, tripped on it. I didn't fall all the way down, but it was quite obvious what had happened, and there was certainly a ripple of stifled laughter that went through the crowd. Now, I have no idea what I said in that moment. I think I regained my dignity enough. I think I probably said whatever needed to be said in the moment. That is actually very much of a blur, as is the whole performance. But what I do surely remember is that stumble. It has come to my mind countless times since then. Now, why is that? Why do I remember that sickening sensation so easily, but at the same time have a much harder time conjuring up all the times that I did okay or even actually did well with a similar opportunity? I wager that many of you have something or some things like that in your past too. So what do you think? Is our brain wired to disproportionately focus on our mistakes? Is that part of our trial and error learning methodology? Perhaps. But I think that there's a significant downside to it, even if it is some sort of evolutionary gift for us. First of all, to go back to my pitiable Wisconsin Singers embarrassment, it really wasn't my fault. I mean, my mistake was being inexperienced at how to deal with stage lighting. Although, I do frankly admit that if and when I am ever called upon to do such a thing again in the future, I will be darn sure that I know absolutely where every obstacle is in my path. So maybe it is a necessary part of our learning processes. But it also seems that maybe it's an outgrowth of what we call our childhood shame. Now, have you ever spent a large block of time observing young children at play? How joyous and free their spirits are. How unembarrassed they are to look at themselves in the mirror and sing with all their might, or to dance with total abandon, or to proudly display the thing that they just drew. And then sadly, as they grow older, at some point they begin to feel conspicuous and self-conscious, which of course is part of beginning to see themselves in relationship to others and no longer as the center of the universe. But it's such a loss when that embarrassment creeps in and their spontaneity begins to vanish and they begin hiding portions of themselves, quelling their own light, toning down their enthusiasm for this adventure that we call life, lest they might do something wrong in public, lest they show their imperfection, lest they make a mistake. But once it begins, it seems that this self-conscious fear of making mistakes continues well into adulthood. It just expresses itself differently. I know so many adults who suffer from the imposter syndrome. People who strive to do well, many times in fact are highly, highly accomplished, but who underneath it all carry with them this unspoken belief that if people really knew how unskilled they actually are, or how shallow their thoughts actually are, or how confused they so often feel, or how totally uncertain of themselves they are, how many mistakes they actually make, that if people really knew that, they would know that everything that they've ever accomplished has really just been the outcome of some cosmic accident, certainly not earned through their efforts or their worth. Oh, in the 12-step programs, I've heard people talking about being afraid that they'll get their covers pulled, describing that sense that many of us feel, that we hide under this thick layer of blankets and we have this deeply entrenched belief of our own unworthiness, and that all that it's going to take is one astute person to grab a corner and yank it, and suddenly there we are with no place to hide in all of our vulnerability. Such an emotional burden, such a spiritual cost we carry. I think people sometimes overcompensate for these kinds of feelings so that they then refuse to acknowledge that they do make errors. Oddly, because they feel so unworthy or fault-filled, their reaction is to quickly minimize or deny any mistake that they make. And of course, we all know how effective that tack is. So, the plea that I bring you today is to invite all of us as we begin this new year, as we make all of our resolutions and our personal commitments, to consciously work on adding in a good measure of self-forgiveness. Of course, there are some important components necessary for true forgiveness, whether it's toward ourselves or toward others. When we make a mistake, let's just say so. There's no need to grovel under the weight of it, but neither is it good to hide from it. It's just a mistake. We all make mistakes. If there are people to whom you should make amends over it, then do that. Do take whatever action is necessary to clean up the fallout from our errors. But once you've owned the responsibility of it, you do own it. It's yours. So now you can use it. Our mistakes can be powerful educational tools for us. But if we create shackles out of our errors, they can't be the valuable teachers that they might otherwise be. But do take responsibility for the error, but then know that it is merely the outcome of being one among humanity. No better, no worse. We all stumble. We all fall. The quicker we can face our errors without shame, the deeper the resilience that we build within ourselves, the more enjoyable our lives can feel, and the more apt we are to really integrate the learning that's available in those moments. Those of you who know my theological bent know that I am deeply enamored with the Tao Te Ching. For me, it offers an endless well of wisdom. And one of my favorites is this section from number 67 in the Stephen Mitchell translation. He says, "I have just three things to teach: simplicity, patience, compassion. Simple in action and in thought, you return to the source of being. Patient with both friend and enemies, you accord with the way things are." Here's the kicker. "Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world." Compassionate toward yourself, you reconcile all beings in the world. Now, Lao Tzu, or whoever it was that actually wrote that, knew that in order for us to be pure and clean in our relationships with others, in order for us to be able to forgive others with open and unfettered hearts, we need to begin with compassion for ourselves. If we refuse compassion to ourselves, we can't hope to be an open vessel through which healing can come to our troubled world. Our Unitarian Universalist belief offers a brilliant, deep, boundless belief system that guides our step every day if we let it. When we speak of the seven principles and we refer to the dignity and worth of all beings, we have to remember that it is our own dignity and worth that we are talking about as well. Each one of us is uniquely gifted and singularly positioned in this world to bring blessings that no other being can bring. We are not imposters. We are not screw-ups. Nor are we perfect. We're just us, plain and simple. But the us that we are is wondrous. The me that each one of us is an astounding miracle of bone and flesh, of nerves and vessels, of thoughts and dreams. Each and every one of us is a marvel of the universe without replication anywhere. That is awesome in the truest sense of the word. Ours is a faith where we do not look heavenward for absolution. We eschew the idea of an original sin. We don't believe that there is a God up there who is waiting for us to ask so that he can bestow cleansing upon our sinful souls. But we do believe that absent that sort of divine intervention, it is up to us, our hearts, our lives, our own two hands, to bring forgiveness and compassion to humankind. A colleague and a friend of mine, the Reverend Rob Eller Isaacs, wrote what he called a litany of atonement. He's used this in various forms to celebrate Yom Kippur in his congregations, the Feast of Atonement. But the words, since the very first time I've heard it, have echoed in my mind, regardless of what holy day it may or may not be. There's a refrain that he used that has been very helpful in support of my own spiritual journey, and it has helped my marriage with Rosie as well. I've offered it to many others. It is, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. So when I mess up, when I make an inadvertent or even a thoughtless mistake, I try hard to quickly own it thoroughly and completely, and then to move to a place of compassion for myself also quickly, because I don't want to hide from myself or my loved ones. I want to be present and tender to every moment that life has to offer me. I don't want to waste my life in needless self-recrimination. And so I find myself saying these words over and over again. I forgive myself. I forgive you. We begin again in love. If you're willing, I would like to invite you to do a slightly modified version of Rob's Litany of Atonement together. If you're comfortable with it, please close your eyes and imagine yourself and your loved ones together. And after each section that I read, if you would just say aloud, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For each time that fear made me rigid and inaccessible, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For each time that I struck out in anger without just cause, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For each time that my greed blinded me to the needs of others, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For the selfishness I sometimes feel, what sets me apart and alone, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For falling short of the urgings of my soul, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. For losing sight of our unity, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. And finally, for these and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which may have fueled the illusion of separateness, I forgive myself, I forgive you, we begin again in love. Though we have broken our vows 1,000 times, may we learn deeply the art of self-forgiveness so that we are then free to genuinely and passionately love and serve this world with open, authentic, unbounded hearts. May it be so. Amen.